This is Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Episode 28, a conversation with David Frum, president of both Bridgeton Hospital and Rumford Hospital.
It just feeds me to come in the next day and be more creative, more visionary, more probing and engaging with folks so that we can continue those successes.
Welcome to the Rural Health Leadership Radio with your host, Dr. Bill Oxier. Each week, Dr. Oxier has a conversation with a different rural health leader to discuss what's working and what's not working in rural health, along with other topics of interest to rural health leaders. Rural Health Leadership Radio's goal is to improve health in rural America by providing a simple, no-cost means to share information and connect rural health leaders from around the country. And now, here's Dr. Oxier with today's guest.
Hi, everybody. I am your host, Bill Oxier, and welcome to Rural Health Leadership Radio. Today's guest is David Frum, the president of both Bridgeton and Rumford Hospitals, two critical access hospitals in Maine that are part of the Central Maine Healthcare System based in Lewiston, Maine. David was named president of Bridgeton Hospital in August of 2010, and then in 2012, he assumed the responsibility as president of Rumford Hospital as well. He served in multiple senior leadership positions, including being the president and CEO of St. Catherine Regional Hospital in Charlestown, Indiana, a 96-bed facility located in a rural market just north of Louisville, Kentucky. He also was the vice president of Baptist Healthcare System in Louisville, and he served as regional vice president of Christa Spahn Health System based in Corpus Christi, Texas. He has an extensive experience in hospital management, medical staff relations, business development, and strategic planning. And David received his master's degree in health service administration from the University of Alabama at Birmingham and earned a master's degree in public administration from Louisiana State University, where he also received a Bachelor of Science degree. So both Bridgeton and Rumford Hospitals were recognized as top 20 critical access hospitals in 2016 by the National Rural Health Association. And David, I've heard rumor that there's been more recognition, and we'll get into that. But I'm truly honored to have you as a guest today. Welcome to Rural Health Leadership Radio.
Bill, it's absolutely a joy to be with you, and I look forward to the conversation.
Well, thank you, David, because I have to give David special recognition as a very generous guest, because we tried to do this once before and the software didn't work. So, David, thank you. Thank you again for going through this.
I'm happy to help out, Bill. No problem.
Well, thank you. So what is your definition of leadership?
Simply put, Bill, I think it's being able to be reflective enough and intuitive enough to know when to coach, to know when to wait and watch, and to know when to intervene. And along with that, knowing the timing of when to motivate, when to inspire, and when to create the right context or the burning platform that helps move folks through a pace of change that they might not want to go through. So it's simply being in tune with when to do it and what to do at the right time.
Excellent. A very nice definition of leadership. So, David, you could have gone a lot of different ways with a career path. Why did you choose healthcare as an occupation?
Bill, I could probably give you an hour's dissertation on this, but I think some of it was coincidence and some of it was blessing. But by bit of history, my father was a superintendent of public schools for nearly 40 years. So I think kind of the administrative side was always an influence around the dining room table. And my mother, by background and experience, was a clinical therapeutic dietitian. So you weave those two together and somehow you end up with this concept of administration and healthcare coming together. And then over some fortuitous opportunities, when I was an undergraduate student at LSU, I had the opportunity to do a two-week summer internship at a local hospital there in Baton Rouge, and really then began to see how this combination of responsibilities and skill sets could really apply itself in an industry. And that was really kind of the catalyst to go on and achieve a master's in public administration, focusing on health policy, and a master's in hospital administration. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, that's always interesting to find out how people ended up where they are in life. So, along that same line, you know, you've worked in large urban hospitals and you've worked in a lot of turnaround situations. Now you're the CEO of not just one, but two critical access hospitals. Why the transition to rural health?
Well, Bill, I think simply put, there's probably three answers to that. First and foremost, in my career, when I've had system-wide responsibilities at a regional VP level or a VP level, I actually had critical access hospitals in my responsibilities or rural hospitals in my responsibilities. So I was never really distant from the rural track from a healthcare standpoint. But as I got later in my career, first and foremost, the family really wanted to kind of move and locate in New England. I was fortunate enough to gain the opportunity with Central Maine Healthcare. Of course, all of Maine is generally rural. So I don't know that it was a conscious choice for rural healthcare, the right opportunity in the right location with the right system and the right set of circumstances. And I couldn't be more thankful given the great journey that we've been on in these two small hospitals. And I certainly believe that small or large, you can translate good operating practices across any organization.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing that with us. So with you having the experience in the larger urban hospitals and the rural hospitals, what are the differences that you've experienced between the two?
What a great question. I refer to that as the double-edged sword. I think sometimes in larger facilities, you have the complement of additional resources, assets, if you will, at your disposal that you might not have in a small and rural location. But equally, in larger settings, you can be encumbered with a significant amount of bureaucracy or inertia. Whereas in the smaller setting, Bill, you can make decisions quickly. Honestly, you can pull them back quickly if they're not working well. Mm-hmm. But you don't have a lot of those excess resources around you. So you really become, and your staff become much more of a broad-based jack of all trades, if you will. And I find that refreshing because you can find talents just anywhere in the organization. And in small places, you have to. And while it's a double-edged sword, I think I would stack up my experiences in the rural setting and probably have more sense of accomplishment and success in those smaller settings than in the larger settings that, again, sometimes may be encumbered with inertia or layers of committee and structure that make it a little more difficult to make change quickly.
So you would agree with the idea that a rural hospital is not just a smaller version of an urban hospital.
Absolutely. Again, I think that in that small scale, oftentimes you may also be challenged with recruitment. So you've really got to do those deep dives in assessing folks' full capabilities, no matter what level they are in the organization. Being able to truly know what they can bring to the table and then apply that in ways that move the organization forward is very different than a larger organization where, you know, there's really a role and a box for just about any title you can think of. And sometimes folks don't have the opportunity to break through that. If they're an analyst, they're an analyst. Maybe that analyst also has some technical skills that can help us in other parts of the division or the hospital that makes sense. And in that smaller scale, you've got to find those talents and you've got to find those latent competencies that may not be obvious if you're in a larger setting.
Thank you. So Bridgeton Hospital has been around since 1917. Rumford Hospital's been around since 1924, so they both have quite the histories associated with them. Both hospitals were honored in 2016 when they were selected as top 20 critical access hospitals in the United States by the NRHA. I know that you've said that you've received some other awards. What else is new in the award and recognition area for Bridgeton and Rumford Hospitals?
Well, it's my privilege to let you know that at the end of 2016, Bridgeton Hospital was also named by the LeapFrog organization as a top hospital in the small and rural category. As you well know, Bill, a fair amount of rigor to come over that hurdle and be named as a LeapFrog top organization. Only 21 hospitals across the country in 2016 were named by LeapFrog as a top rural facility. So we'll add that to the list of accolades. And we also received late in 2016 an acknowledgement by the state of Maine through the Maine Health Access Foundation that Bridgeton Hospital is the only hospital in the state of Maine to achieve top quartile performance in their four quadrants of a balanced scorecard. So we've got something special in place, a little more prolific in terms of the awards at Bridgeton this year, but I could tell you if we went back 2 years ago, there was probably more awards on the Rumford side of things. So we know we've got a bit of a secret sauce and it seems to be bearing some fruit for us in terms of the recognition.
Well, that's incredible and congratulations on that recognition. that has to make you proud as being the president and the CEO of those two hospitals. What's going on there? What are you doing? And what is your hospital doing that's leading to all these awards?
You know, I could flippantly say it's great senior leadership, but it's really so much deeper than that, Bill.
It's not just all about you?
No, it's really not. If my team were on this interview, they'd make sure you knew that. The reality of it is we've inculcated in both hospitals best practices across the two institutions. Small hospitals do operate slightly differently, just as large hospitals do. But if I've got a lab in my Rumford Hospital that's perhaps a tick or two outperforming my Bridgeton lab, I can replicate those best practices and I can share those back and forth, primarily because I share a management team across those hospitals now. So I did take the step shortly after I came on board for both hospitals, and many of our management positions do have responsibilities on both campuses. That helps me translate best practices. Second thing we do, Bill, is really basic blocking and tackling, active daily management, and the rigor that goes with that. Every single manager in the hospital every day for a 15-minute huddle at the beginning of the day, if you will, takes a pause. We huddle. We can do that virtually through electronic capabilities. And we go department by department. So we know we can lift our heads up for that 15 minutes and go, Jane's had 3 callouts today. Joan's got a few cancellations in the schedule. She's got some staff folks. She might be able to float over to Jane. Let's go ahead and do that. And in the same vein, gets us actively talking about those assets I mentioned earlier that, you know, Jane also happens to have somebody who is going to get furloughed today because volumes are pretty low, but that person also has prior experience in working in plant operations. So plant operations has got somebody out on family medical leave. Let's go ahead and transfer that person over. So we're actively cultivating those skills that are latent within the organization, actively talking about what's going on a daily basis. And then it's simply put, we keep our eye on our dashboard, our monthly dashboard. We actually go at it at least twice monthly so that we're keeping our eyes on all 4 quadrants of the balance scorecard. And over time, Bill, what that has ended up meaning for us is we've got stickiness to it. It's got traction and it's somewhat feeding itself in terms of how these two organizations manage themselves. And that's created a lot of great results for us.
Interesting. You know, when you talked about the basic blocking and tackling with the 15-minute huddle each day, it sounds like you've done a lot of cross training with your staff or a lot of development. Can you expand on that?
Very much so. In fact, that may be one of the more unique things I think that we've brought to this small scale. Our two critical access hospitals are about 40 miles apart. But when we first started doing these daily huddles, the first thing we did was take an inventory of first our clinical staff, then our support staff, of skill sets that might apply to other functions. And then when we were at a place we could free these folks up to cross-train them into other departments, we made ourselves abundantly flexible in terms of where we can move our staff around. As an example, I recently went through a transition of a general surgeon in one of my small hospitals. I'm sure your listeners know in rural healthcare, losing a surgeon is a big thing. And I did not want to lose my surgical nurses. 2 of them, it turns out, had prior experience being nurses in the ED. We gave them the requisite extra shifts in the ED so they could train back up. And because our EDs were getting busier and busier, they kept their hours. I kept 2 surgical nurses very, very engaged. And as we recruited that general surgeon back, they naturally flowed back to the OR, content, engaged, and very satisfied that they could help the organization through a difficult time. So those are the kinds of things we're doing on a regular basis, Bill, that I really think is, if there's a core to the secret sauce, the key ingredient, that's probably it. Just thinking about who you have at the table, who's working for you, and what are the skills that they might bring to the table that are over and above the department they currently sit in.
That just makes too much sense, David, but the creative. Okay.
Well, my staff kind of regularly, well, maybe I regularly refer to myself as kind of the Forrest Gump approach to things, the rather simple approach to things, oftentimes gets rid of a lot of the clutter and the rationalizations of why you can't do something. And it was a very it made sense to me too, Bill, and it made sense to the staff, and it just connected, and we're getting a lot of traction out of that. So it's it may not be totally unique, but it's something we're very proud of.
Well, it's a great idea, and obviously you're executing on that. So you know this intentional internal development that you're doing, you know that's unique. Is there anything else unique that you've done as a rural health leader that really worked out?
Well, I referred to it earlier. I'm not sure how unique it is. Certainly at the senior level, there are other senior leaders that might have responsibilities for multiple rural hospitals. I'm not unique in that way, having two hospitals under my purview in the rural markets. But to go to that mid-level management layer and two hospitals 40 miles apart, consolidating the management teams was a bit of a leap. And I think, again, while it was a struggle at first to make that mindset change, our managers now that have the purview of two well-operating departments, they can pick up every day those best practices and translate them from one organization to the other. And that's really moved us to a next level performance in just about every department. There are, just so your listeners hear this, there are a couple of departments where we absolutely keep a manager responsible on one campus. Those are typically things like pharmacy. You have to have a pharmacist on campus. I have a chief nurse in both hospitals, so they oversee their clinical practice on their campus. But other than that, we've pretty much consolidated the management teams, and that's had a lot of success for us.
Excellent. Thank you, David. Right now, we're going to take a short break to hear a word from our sponsor. Then we'll be right back to continue our conversation with today's guest, David Frum, the president of Bridgeton and Runford Hospitals, two critical access hospitals in Maine. Leadership makes the difference with financial success, clinical success, and delivering value. Leadership effectiveness drives profits and value. Engaged leaders listen to patients, employees, providers, and community members. Engaged leadership drives results. The Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health assists rural health leaders achieve greatness through individualized coaching and group coaching. A new coaching program just developed by the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health is the 5 Steps to Maximize Leadership Effectiveness for Greater Profitability and Value. We're inviting 3 critical access hospitals to beta test this program. If you would like to be one of these hospitals, call or email us today. This is a limited opportunity, so call 813-658-0422 or send an email to bill@billoxier.com today. Be the leader you want to be. Call or email today to capture this valuable opportunity for maximized leadership effectiveness for greater profitability and greater value. We're having a very interesting conversation today with David Frum. He's the president of Bridgeton and Runford Hospitals, two critical access hospitals in Maine that are getting all kinds of awards and accolades recently, being named as top 20 critical access hospitals last year by the NRHA, and Bridgeton being named by Leapfrog as one of the top critical access hospitals in the United States. So thank you again for joining us. One of the things that we were talking about right before the break, you inserted a word that I like to point out, and it was engaged. You talk about how engaged your employees are. And what are you doing? I mean, you talked about the cross-training. Is there other things that you're doing to encourage your hospital employees to be engaged employees?
If you can think of it, Bill, we have probably tried it. And for your listeners, keeping staff engaged is probably the most challenging thing we have, because we can all fall into routines. We can all get distracted with the noise that's over and above the operations. But it's everything from intentional rounding. It is everything such as I attend every single new employee orientation, and I take the first hour and really talk about the culture and the expectations and what they should expect of me, let alone what I should expect of them. It's simple things to try to hit all generations. I do a monthly video newsletter that we post through our intranet, and I also do the old-fashioned handwritten letter for those who may not quite enjoy going out to the internet to pick up the newsletter, with some specificity, kind of crashing departmental huddles, so that either I or another senior leader pop in. It is with intentional behavior in that we may know something's going on in a department. The staff are together for a departmental meeting. So myself or a senior leader shows up and, you know, acknowledges if there's something great that's occurred or if there's an issue that needs some top level senior leader attention, we're right there on the spot. We readily do town halls as well as a host of other things to try to connect folks. And I think I was told once it takes 7 or 8 times to convey one message to each person. And about the time you're getting bored of talking about it is about the time folks are starting to listen. So once we get through the communication pieces and hit that repetitively, I then find staff are much more likely to ask the engaging questions as to why something's happening or why something's not happening and what they might be able to do to help it. And I'm proud to tell you that our two institutions take part every other year in a national employee engagement survey led by a outside company that does this all over the country with some 400 or 500 hospitals. And we're typically in the top quartile from a level of engagement. I think Rumford last year was actually in about the 80th percentile and Bridgeton about the 75th. So repetition and consistency.
You're obviously doing something right there. So thank you for sharing that with us. You know,
sure.
We learn a lot about tactics and strategies that we attempt when they don't work out the way we plan, right? So if you wouldn't mind, would you share a story about something that you tried that didn't work out the way you planned?
I wish I could say, Bill, there's just never been an experience where we've screwed something up. But the truth is that list is probably equally long. Trying to think off the top of my head here. We at one point made an attempt. Here's one that comes to mind. Our operations team, which is our mid-level managers, gets together once a month. We made an attempt at one point to rotate the responsibility for leading that meeting, trying to get a deeper level of engagement from our managers. It seems like a simple idea. We were trying to get that mid-level manager much more active or proactive in leading the larger issues in the organization. I can honestly tell you the feedback we got after about 6 months was simply put, take this back, ask us to engage in a different way. Mm-hmm. But it's senior leadership's role to be in front of this room leading these issues. It doesn't work for us. What I'm so proud to say, Bill, is I said, okay, we can do that. But how can we get you better engaged in this meeting to help us driving these things? And since that time, we converted then our monthly ops meeting to breakout sessions. We bring issues forward. We break out into groups of 4 or 5. The managers work the problem, and then they come back and present their ideas for how we might want to address something. And it pulled them into engagement that way. So without the failure on the front end, which was admittedly my kind of lame idea, we wouldn't have gotten to a different result. And I will proudly tell you, yes, that's one of many failings we've had, but that's how we learn is we learn from those mistakes.
Exactly. That's great. And if you're not learning from your mistake, if you're not making mistakes, you're not trying. And if you're not learning from those mistakes, you're not growing. So thank you for sharing that with us. So
exactly.
What would you say is your top leadership strength?
I think it would have to be perseverance. This can be an absolutely relentless industry, and we're getting pressures from all over the place, particularly with the upcoming transition at the national level from a presidency standpoint, state pushes from being a state that did not expand from a Medicaid standpoint. I think sheer perseverance has helped me continue to keep organizations performing at a high level, because half the battle is showing up. And the other half is really kind of performing at an exceptional level. Right behind that, Bill, I would have to say vision. It's something my team regularly comments to me, that I can create vision and direction in ways that are meaningful and resonant from the boiler room to the boardroom. And that, I think, would be another leadership skill that really helps me be a successful CEO.
Thank you for sharing that. I know that perseverance means showing up even when you don't want to, right?
Right.
So in your opinion, you've seen a lot of hospital CEOs, both urban and rural, over your career. In your opinion, what do rural health leaders need to do differently?
What a great, great question. Boy, Bill, you're asking the fine point questions today. I think in some ways, as a group, I wouldn't say, you know, this person or that person, but as a group, I really think there are now becoming demonstrated organizations that are showing success and showing results. I don't think we should cower in the corner that we're small and we don't have large voice and we're not able to overcome the mountains that are in front of us. Not just Birch and Rumford Hospitals. There are many examples out there of where these small and rural institutions are really doing some great things. And we need to collectively channel that through things like you're doing, through all the advocacy groups and constituencies we need to, and show that there can be best practices despite all the burdens placed on us. I get frustrated when I sit at association meetings or larger settings and folks feel overwhelmed by the pending future or the doom and gloom. And Bill, you know this, and I'm sure many of your listeners know this. If you've been in this industry long enough, you've been through two or three different payment reforms. You've been through two or three different contractions in the industry and rapid expansions in the industries. As rural leaders, we need to embrace what we do really, really well, and we need to act with a single voice and make sure we can replicate that across small hospitals all over the country.
So what scares you the most about the future of rural health, David?
Probably that I'm dead wrong with what I just said. I think there are absolute, I alluded to it earlier, I think there are absolute pressures. A new president coming in at the national level with absolute focus on repeal, and well, maybe there'll be a replacement at some point. Statewide budget pressures. And clearly put, the payers on all fronts ratcheting down. I do believe as an industry, particularly I can argue for my hospitals more directly, we are bending the cost curve. In fact, we've reduced the cost curve over the last 2 years when you look at a per discharge basis. But the loss of protection for critical access providers, the implications, what that may mean in terms of not only the cost-based reimbursement for our inpatient care, but the ripple effects of the loss of 340B drug pricing and those things that help us be successful and retain the slimmest of bottom lines. Those would be the things that probably scare me the most if universally in Washington or at the state level, they just get removed without really thinking through the implications on ultimately the patient. Even if you set the hospital aside and say, well, maybe, you know, there's a market that doesn't need a hospital, at the end of it, particularly in rural America, the loss of a hospital means a patient has to go further for care. And some of our older patients just won't do that. So we have an effect when things are contracted of truly changing the health of the community. And that's probably my most consistent concern.
So what excites you the most about the future of rural health?
Well, if you haven't heard the energy in my voice, I really think that there are success stories. And I'm coming up on my seventh year here at Bridgeton and a little bit less than that, having Rumford as well. We've been on a journey, and that journey is now beginning to get recognized. It's beginning to have its traction and stickiness. And as a leader, that just feeds me. It just feeds me to come in the next day and be more creative, more visionary, more probing and engaging with folks so that we can continue those successes. And if you will, we may have climbed some mountaintops already. I'd rather us be looking at the next mountain to climb, be less worried about the slide down the mountain and just start climbing the next mountain because we know there'll be another one and another one and another one. That's exciting. Gets my juices flowing, and I should probably stop there or I'll just keep talking about it.
That's an excellent metaphor that I appreciate. And I can hear the excitement in your voice, which is very good, which is very cool. So one last question for you. What's next for Bridgeton and Rumford Hospitals?
What a great question. I just in the last month took my senior team on a day-long getaway, and we kind of put on one side of the board all the accolades and successes and great outcomes that we have. And I had a blank right-hand side of the board. And I said, okay, that's great. These are fabulous that we've achieved these, but what do we want to do? What's our new future? And where we came to, Bill, and we're still working this through, but where we came to is we've been really, really effective at doing more with less. We're now embracing, truly getting in on redesigning how we deliver care, engaging our providers, engaging our staff, figuring out what are the steps of waste in any given process, keeping our patient in the center of that, and redesigning for a much different equation in terms of the complexity that many patients oftentimes feel when they come into our hospital. Second thing we're looking to do in terms of what's next, I think we need to predict that in the near future, I won't say next year or the year after, but in the relatively near future, 3 to 5 years out, absolutely need to think through what it might mean if we were to lose our critical access status. How do we continue to be viable and successful without protections of CAH status? And secondly, we think we've got a formula of low cost. We know we have low cost. We know we have great outcome measures. And we also know we have great service scores. That's the value equation. How do we leverage that value equation to the marketplace, to the payer place, and begin to move business, even though it's a rural setting, move business for the types of care that are appropriate for us, that we can demonstrate better outcomes and a better value for the payer and for the consumer. I think that's our next journey, and that's what's next for us.
Excellent. I have no doubt that you and your team will be able to accomplish that. David, thank you so much for joining us today, for sharing your thoughts and observations and the experiences that you've had in rural health and the success that you've had at Bridgeton and Rumford Hospitals. And I want to thank all of you today for listening. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever your favorite podcast app is, and subscribe to Rural Health Leadership Radio. And if you'd like to leave a rating or a review on iTunes, you can go to our website, www.rhlradio.com, and click on the iTunes link. And to continue the conversation of leadership in rural health, you can join our LinkedIn group called Rural Health Leadership Radio. Until next week, let's keep working to improve healthcare in rural America.
If you would like to connect with today's guest, please send an email with your contact information to bill@billoxier.com. If you would like to be a guest or suggest someone else as a guest, have a question you would like to ask, or simply want to contact Rural Health Leadership Radio, please use that same email address, bill@billoxier.com. That's bill@billoxier.com. You can also visit our website at www.rhlradio.com.
We'd ask that you please support our sponsor, the Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health. The Dynamic Leadership Academy for Rural Health's mission is to improve rural health one leader at a time.